is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch the Boy Wonder here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. My special guest today is a composer, a musician, and a digital processing expert by the name of Ace Baker, and it's a great pleasure to have him on today. We're going to discuss issues related to video fakery on 9/11. Ace, welcome aboard. Ace. Are you there, my friend?
I'm here. Good to be here. Can you hear me? Hello, hello.
Glad to hear your voice. Glad to hear your voice.
There I am.
No problem at all. I was thinking we might talk a little bit about these rebuttals to September clues and other efforts to debunk the idea that there was video fakery on 9/11.
Okay, let's do it.
Where should we begin? Maybe with Anthony Lawson's piece and then turn to Nick Irving's?
Yeah, well, I kind of put the two of them together. They're pretty much making the same points. I know from your website you have the Nick Irving's PDF linked. What's it called? Debunking September Clues.
Right.
And I've got that PDF pulled up, and I'm looking at it now.
Right.
So hopefully I can. Be a little referee to the extent that I can here, and try to separate the wheat from the chaff, because there's a lot of material and there's a lot to go through here.
Yeah, well, that's a great idea. And I was just starting to read it through myself and noticed some points worth discussing too. Shall we start right off the bat then with Nick's stuff, and then go to Anthony's at the end?
Okay. Well, the first thing in this PDF is it says the fade to black. So in September Clues, he makes the point that several of the 9/11 videos right at or right after the airplane appears to explode into the tower, the picture fades to black, which seems very suspicious. And
particularly since it's across several networks.
Absolutely. And the most suspicious of all, of course, is the infamous Pinocchio's nose or Chopper 5 shot, where you see the plane come across the screen, disappear behind the edge of the tower, and then the nose of the airplane appears to pop out the reverse side of the tower momentarily, and then they fade to black, and then they come back up to picture, and all signs of the airplane are gone. And I would point out that that particular piece of footage has been cleansed from the archives. If you will go to the network archives that were posted for some time, they have a different piece of video with the exact same voiceover that happened. So it sure seems like they don't want us to see that particular piece of footage. So in trying to say that those fades to black aren't suspicious, Anthony Lawson and Nick Irving want us to believe that it's some sort of a signal interruption. They point out that there is broadcast equipment on top of World Trade Center building number one, and that there could have been some sort of signal interruption that caused these fades to black on these various channels.
Yeah, let me compare a note or two with you. I mean, there are a couple of things. It looks to me like they're just trying to find some alternative explanation, even if it may be highly implausible. I mean, they're trying to suggest here, it seems to me, that if there's any alternative possibility, then you should discount what appears to be the more probable explanation.
Right.
And therefore, it seems to me the reasoning is not particularly sound as I look at it.
Well, on this particular point, the reasoning isn't sound at all. The broadcast equipment that was on top of Trade Center Tower Number 1 had absolutely nothing to do with the signal that would go from a news helicopter to the station. A news helicopter delivers its signal to the TV station via a microwave signal off of a satellite. The broadcast equipment on top of the World Trade Center was for broadcasting to the customers, like old school broadcast television and also FM radio, things like that. It had absolutely zero, nothing, nada to do with relaying a signal from a news helicopter to the television station. That is just, it's just a completely silly possible explanation. Furthermore, we've all seen signal interruptions from news helicopters. You can see them almost any time there is a news helicopter. There can be signal interruptions, and they do not cause a fade to black. You see them, you'll get a freeze frame, or the picture will start to pixelate and turn into a bunch of squares, or you'll see digital noise, those sorts of things. You do not see a fade to black. A fade to black is accomplished by a guy pulling the knob down on the broadcast console. That's how you do a fade to black. So that explanation on that particular point this doesn't fly at all.
And probably this would require all those monitors to pull those levers at all the same time in relation to this footage if it were authentic.
Exactly right. And what appears is that the one fade to black on Chopper 5 happened live. The other ones that we now see on the archives were put there after the fact. These archives that have been posted came out, you know, long after the fact, and were on the archive.org, which is a government website, and they were the official cleansed versions. And like I say, the video from that Chopper 5 is gone, and you still hear anchor person Jim Ryan of WNYW saying, you know, oh my goodness, there's another one. You still hear the exact same voiceover, but they've substituted a completely different piece of footage from a different network in there, and they've just completely forgotten about that nose-out footage.
You know, something about, you know, since Anthony Lawson's whole piece, about half an hour long, is really devoted to just this part of it, I was kind of disturbed that he was suggesting that the videos had to be faked right as though they were being done right at the time. I mean, he had a misunderstanding or gives a false claim about when this preparation would have been done to introduce this fake video, as though it had to be done right on the spot.
Well, he makes and Nick Irving, I think, makes the same point about that. They call it split second timing. And I want to stress this. I've said this over and over, but I want to say it again. None of the videos that were shown live or close to live show a plane hitting a tower. They show a plane crossing the screen and disappearing behind the edge of a tower. The ones that appear to show the plane melting into the tower, those came out much, much later. So they would have had the airplane image ready to go, prepared long ahead of time, sitting on a transparent channel called an alpha channel that could be overlaid. And the timing would have to be good. You'd want the plane to disappear behind the edge of the tower and then have the explosion happen. But they could easily record the explosion, then overlay the plane, then play the thing back within 15 or 20 seconds and call it live.
And, of course, that's true also of the Naudé brothers' footage, which I think wasn't shown at least until that night, possibly the next day. Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest, Ace Baker. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. Today, my special guest, Ace Baker, is a musician, a composer, and a digital processing expert. And he's been doing a lot of research on the issue of video fakery on 9/11, which, in my opinion, is one of the most interesting issues that we have ever dealt with in relation to 9/11 research. It's very complex, and it's also very controversial. We're taking a look at a study that you can find on 9/11scholars.org. If you scroll down into New Studies and go down below September Clues, which is an 8-part video series, each of which is 9 minutes and 58 seconds in length, you'll find a piece entitled Debunking September Clues by Nick Irving, who's a member of Scholars, a point-by-point analysis. And Ace and I have been talking about the very first point regarding the pixels and the fade to black of what appears to be the nose of a plane coming through the building pretty much intact. Is that a good place to pick it up, Ace, with the pixels of the nose? Or?
Well, we can tell. I mean, I think the nose out is the mistake they made. It's clear to me that what appears to be the nose of the airplane coming out the side of the building, it's indistinguishable from the nose of the airplane in size, in shape, in color. And the official explanation has gotten to be that it's some sort of dust explosion. And I just don't see, how an explosion could form a point. It's just too unlikely that it would be the same size and the same shape and the same color and the same altitude as the nose of the airplane. And then when you couple that with the fact that they have cleansed that video from the archives, and then when you look at the replays right after the second strike occurred within the first 5-10 minutes on various networks, there were some replays of this footage, and they put their station logo graphics up so high in the picture that it covered up the airplane. I mean, clearly they were just literally and figuratively just covering it up.
Now, Anthony, I think, I'm not sure about Nick, argues that it's just the usual placement of the logo, but, that might be true. But the most interesting feature of the film is what's going on here that's obscured by the logo. I mean, you'd think that some editor would be smart enough to get the logo out of the way of the most important feature of what was being shown in the broadcast.
Right, and just the fact that on the actual live or nearly live broadcast, they've just completely replaced it. And so there was, it's
right.
Clear to me, there was something in that video that they didn't want us to they don't want us to see. So
that's right. They had to change it from the original broadcast in order to get the logo in there to conceal it. They had to move the image around.
Right. So now I start by bringing up some points where I feel September Clues is right and Anthony Lawson and Nick Irving are wrong. I can bring an example where I think Lawson and Irving are right and September Clues is wrong. And then after that, I have an example where I think that neither one of them are right.
Yeah, go for it.
In September Clues, the maker of September Clues is a guy named Simon Schack, otherwise known as Social Service. And he shows a copy of Chopper 7 that shows the plane going across the screen. And he points out that the plane appears to skip frames. That is, there appears to be a pattern of frames missing. It goes for 5 frames, then skips one, then goes for 5 more frames and skips one. And he seems to think that this is suspicious. Lawson and Irving point out that when you transfer American video, that is NTSC, to European video, which is PAL, they're at a different frame rate. American is 30 frames a second, European is 25, and the exact result of that is that 1 out of every 6 frames gets dropped, and this exact pattern of missing frames is exactly what you would expect. And I understand that Social Service is in Europe, so he probably had some European copy of it. And Lawson and Irving are exactly right. That pattern of missing frames is just not a suspicious thing at all.
I would just point out, however, to make sure there's no ambiguity in the minds of our listeners, that what we're talking about here, this loss of every 5th or 6th frame due to a difference between U.S. and PAL broadcasting procedures, et cetera, is very different than the repetition of background frames that you discovered in other footage where the same background is repeated for a second frame even though the plane is moving forward across the screen.
Oh, yeah. That's exactly right. And in this, what we're talking about now, the background and the foreground all agree with each other. There's missing frames out of the background and the airplane. And so on that particular little point, I just don't think we need to worry about that. And
what was your take on this business of the woman from Chelsea, this Teresa Renault, who claimed to have been able to see the plane hit the building from Chelsea? And of course, in September Clues, the implication is made that it would have been too difficult to view it from Chelsea. And here the Lawson points out that she was in a tall building and it was facing toward the the Trade Center, which makes it seem much more plausible that she could have seen it, and also suggests that Simon Shack may have done some editing of what she actually reported.
Yeah, what's really interesting, yeah, she's about 3 miles north of the towers, so she could not have seen the actual impact because that was on the south face of the South Tower, but she could have seen a plane from 3 miles out. What's really interesting is the address that she reports being at. I don't think she ever really says, well, I'm at home or I'm at work, but that address turns out to be one of the largest buildings in New York by square footage, and it is, in fact, a huge television and computer complex, this state-of-the-art sort of top-secret media center.
Really?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I can get you maybe on the break. I'll pull up some more information on that. Maybe we can talk about that in the next segment. But, it's, you know, what was she doing there? And, of course, this Teresa Renault is the wife of a CBS producer, I guess, and it does turn out that almost all of the people who happened to be on the phone at the time of these impacts were either network news employees or relatives.
Fascinating. We'll be right back with my special guest, Ace Baker. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. My special guest today is Ace Baker, who's a musician and a composer and a digital processing expert, and we're talking about a response to September Clues, in the first instance by Nick Irving, in the second by Anthony Lawson. And you were mentioning how this woman who called in, this Teresa Renault, called from a super secret high-tech complex in the middle of the city.
Right, and it's I guess it's 111 8th Avenue in Chelsea. Subsequently, I know Google has taken over part of that building and has about 500 employees in there. But I guess it's been a television studio complex for a long, long time. And there's still great mystery as to where a number of 9/11 broadcasts actually originated from. There's a stock shot that we see that was from ABC and other networks picked up on it too. It's just a view of the World Trade Center from the north, and they caught the second airplane strike from that view. They caught the demolitions from that view. And we don't really know where those shots were taken from. And I've seen one 3D modeling study that appeared that would be the view from 111 8th Avenue in Chelsea. Also, there's the infamous Jane Stanley BBC broadcast at about 5 o'clock on 9/11, where she announces that Building 7 has indeed collapsed, and she's standing in front of a window, apparently, and of course, Building 7 is still standing and was not to be demolished for another 20 minutes. And BBC have never answered any questions about where she was actually broadcasting from. So it's possible that media complex had something to do with the whole deal.
Yeah, that's really fascinating.
Huh. So there was one where September Clues is right, one where Lawson and Irving are right. The issue where they both get it wrong is on this business of masking, and I want to just talk about masking just for a minute.
Yeah.
To do video compositing, anybody who's played with Photoshop, for example, it's based in layers, and you can have any number of layers, and these video compositing programs like Adobe After Effects are quite similar, just you're working with moving pictures instead of still images. But on any given layer, you can create a mask, and that is an area of the screen where anything that's on that particular layer that goes into that area where the mask is will become invisible. Now, in September Clues, he suggests that the reason for the nose-out mistake in Chopper 5 is that they set the mask on a particular frame, and then the helicopter drifted to the left a certain amount, and so by the time the plane actually came through, why the mask was still sitting in the place it was originally drawn, but because the camera had drifted, that's what misplaced things and allowed the nose of the airplane to seem like it was coming out the other side. Then Lawson and Irving come along and say, well, now, hey, wait a minute, if that's true, yeah, maybe, you know, when the nose came out, that would be wrong, but then the other side where the plane has to appear to go into the building would have been wrong also, and it would have looked like the plane crossed in front of the screen for a little while and then disappeared behind some other edge. Well, all of that is wrong because they would simply would not have created the mask that way. You can draw a mask on a layer that just holds still, but that's not what they did, and that's not how they would have done it. You can, in fact, identify objects on the screen according to what color they are. That's chroma. According to how bright or dark they are, that's luminance. You can find edges, etc. And so this mask can be created in real time, frame by frame, and actually follow the towers around wherever they go. There was plenty of contrast between the blue sky and these gray towers. So the actual mistake that allowed the nose of the airplane to come out the backside was not because of any problem with the mask. Rather, they simply let the video of the airplane run a little too long. They just simply let it run a little bit too long, and it popped out the backside.
Really stunning, isn't it?
Well, it is, you know, and the fact that, you know, that they have, you know, cleansed that one off the internet, you know, that is just guilty behavior, you know. Excuse me.
I'm also struck by Anthony Lawson's tone in this new piece. I mean, it's like he's expressing anger. One of the beautiful parts, I thought, of his previous work about This Is an Orange and 9/11, The Towers of Dust, is a completely relaxed tone of voice, you know, a detachment, a distance. And that's lost here in this new piece. And that troubles me just a bit because it seems to me none of these issues are quite so clear-cut as he and Nick are presenting them and as you are explaining. So, you know, to me, it's troublesome.
Well, it's troublesome to me, too. I had a pretty extensive interaction with Anthony Lawson in September. We exchanged a large number of emails over a period of several weeks, and it began in a very friendly manner, but it quickly descended into some very aggressive language on his part, and in issuing some threats to me, quite frankly, regarding my research, you know, I was kind of uncomfortable with that. Again,
I find that rather appalling, frankly.
You know, but my nature is to just try to, get to the truth of things as best we can, and to, you know, more or less take people on face value. And I think sorting out really people's intentions, maybe it's going to have to be, you know, somebody else's job, you know, and maybe not mine. I'm just going to try to do what I can do.
Neither you nor I take for granted that everything in September Clues is right. On the other hand, they're propounding the thesis that everything in September Clues is wrong.
Right. No, I'll for anybody out there who might be listening who doesn't know me, I mean, I'll state my, you know, my bias and my position. You know, I'm a 9/11 truther. I think the World Trade Center was demolished with high-tech weaponry, and I think there were no planes that hit those towers. I think that it is, you know, physically impossible for an aluminum airplane to bust through those strong walls like that, and I think there was video fakery. So I agree with the large premise of September Clues. But I will say there are a number of mistakes in September clues, and so I think it will be good just to try to get them out on the table. And hopefully when we come back, don't let me forget, I want to talk about this BS registration 9/11 attack video.
Okay. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo with my special guest, Ace Baker. We'll be right back. Today, my special guest is a musician, composer, and digital processing expert who's been studying the video imagery from 9/11 and has detected many signs of fakery coming out of New York City. I think this is one of the most fascinating, complex topics in 9/11 research, and I'm really delighted to have Ace Baker back on the show again. Ace, you wanted me to remind you to bring up some new piece.
There's a few. This is going to be probably another example where I think people might be going too far, looking too hard for video fakery. Now, so the video fakery is kind of splitting into two factions. One that is sort of thinking, well, there's simple video compositing that has gone on where we take essentially real videos and just overlay a fake airplane on them, and basically everything else was real footage, versus people who are saying that actually the videos were completely fabricated or using super advanced future combat system virtual reality technology, and that entire skylines were composited together and so forth, and in trying to show that others, videos that purportedly show that, well, you know, this building is holding still, but the background is sliding around back here and so forth. And a recent example of that, which is also linked from your homepage right now, is from, I think it was from Fred B.S. Registration, and it's on your Scholars for 9/11 Truth homepage. Let me find it here.
Yeah.
Down below September Clues, below Debunking September Clues, we see a couple down, 9/11 Attack Worth Sorting Out, and that leads to a YouTube. Well, it sounds like maybe we both got the flu going on.
No, I know. I got something caught in my throat. Go ahead.
In any case, and of course, Fred B.S. Registration has done a great number of videos looking at this whole video fakery thing. He has the 9/11 Octopus series. But his latest one shows two different 9/11 videos, one from WCBS, I think it is. Let me click on it here. One was the CNN replay. And, yeah, the WNBC 5 and the CNN replay. And what he is trying to say is that these two videos are the same video, that they cropped one of them differently and took the foreground out, but that they're exactly the same, that the explosion is the same, the smoke is the same, the towers are the same. But, of course, you see the airplane coming in from two different angles, therefore it must be fake. He's just completely blown it on this. The two are not the same video. They're not from the same angle. You can see, a much greater slice of the South Tower in one than you can from the other. There's a lot more of the smoke is on the right side of the antenna than there is in, from one video to the other one. And he's just simply wrong. And my concern is that when people start to discover that some of these claims for video fakery are just not correct, that they'll just be turned off to the whole idea of video fakery, when the real number one mistake that they made was letting that darn airplane nose come out. That was really where they blew it.
Well, that's a classic example of what's known as a straw man fallacy, where you use an exaggerated version of a position in order to knock it down and thereby attempt to discredit the original, less vulnerable position. This happened in JFK research when for over about a decade, we studied the home movie of the assassination of the Zapruder film, and critics would make all kinds of arguments that were extrinsic to the film, they would say, oh, well, there was a chain of custody, so it can possibly have happened, and yet we had evidence internal to the film that demonstrated it had been altered. They would say, well, they claim, you know, the critics claim, the alterationists claim the whole thing is a cartoon. No such claim is ever made. I mean, they took authentic video using sophisticated techniques of optical print and special effects. They combined a foreground that had been filmed before the president showed up, and therefore you don't have the bystanders waving and screaming the way they are everywhere else in the motorcade, and it's combined then with another background, and they've altered some events that were indispensable because the driver, William Greer, actually pulled the limousine to the left and to a halt in Dealey Plaza after bullets began to be fired to make sure the man would be killed. But that was such a blatant indication of Secret Service complicity, it had to be removed. But there are all kinds of features. In fact, there are those who have seen the original version of the film before it was reprocessed, recreated, and said when he pulled it to the left, it was very abruptly, so the passengers were thrown forward. And if you look carefully, there's a period there right after Jack is hit when he seems to be accelerating, and yet everyone in the vehicle is thrown forward. So what's that? And that's, of course, contradictory with the acceleration the vehicle is supposed to be undergoing. So this is one of multiple indications that, in fact, the film has been reprocessed, and we have both evidence internal to the film and evidence external to the film. You have the driver looking back, turning his head twice as fast as is physically possible. So that, say, instead of running a 4-minute mile, this is actually the equivalent of running a 2-minute mile. I mean, it's stuff like that, Ace. It's so blatant. And yet these apologists for the government, some of whom it's rather surprising persons, turn out to, you know, use all kinds of fallacious arguments, which is, of course, the necessity. What you're going to resort to is fallacies if you can't win an honest argument, if you can't deal with true premises and in valid or proper reasoning from those premises to conclusions that you like, then obviously you're going to try to distract attention, confound, confuse, and in other ways obfuscate the situation by resorting to various kinds of fallacies.
And you mentioned the frames that were deleted from the Zapruder film, and that, you know, really to me is the one part of that that really sticks out, because you're absolutely right. All four of those people jerk, you know, as if the car had been accelerated, and you know, it's quite clear to me that frames were taken out, and you'll notice in 9/11 that for some reason so many of these videos have frames taken out or discontinuities right at the time of this second hit. You've got the Nowadays second hit where frames are taken out. In fact, there's two, whether they're edits or whether he stopped and started recording. That's the only two possible explanations. I don't even know if it's possible. I don't know what kind of camera he had, but if he stopped and started recording on that second hit and on the Now Day, it would be very, very quickly. You know, otherwise something was cut out there. Various different network broadcasts either cut out or cut to a different camera view exactly when that plane is about to, is about to hit. Then you've got the Bob and Bree, what we saw video that came out just about a year ago. And that one, too, is just cruising right along. And then all of a sudden, there's just a big edit and then a little bit of the fireball left. And they, you know, completely cut out the second hit. And you start just wondering, you know, and then we've got all those fades to black. You know, what are the odds that all of these people stopped recording and they all made edits or they all faded to black all right around the time of the second hit? It just, you know, the odds of that just mathematically start getting to be just too astronomical.
Well, it's really fascinating what we have going on here. And anyone who, you know, has a serious interest in the JFK case should look for the book, The Great Zapruder Film Hoax. Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest, Ace Baker. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch the Boy Wonder here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. My special guest today is a musician and composer and expert on digital processing. We're discussing a couple of responses to research on the possibility of video fakery on 9/11. Ace, before we continue our conversation, I just have to say how ironic I thought it was to hear George W. Bush telling President Musharraf of Pakistan that he's got to take off his uniform and that it's inappropriate for him to be both the president and the commander of the armed services. Maybe Bush doesn't realize he's in that role himself.
I think that's what the Constitution says, of course.
That's what it says.
Since when does anybody pay attention to that anymore?
Well, not in this administration, that's for sure. You know, I'm fascinated by all this stuff. Anthony Lawson really stunned me with some of his observation at the end. You notice he sort of tacked on some remarks about the speed of the plane and saying how, according to the analysis he accepts, it was flying at 572 miles an hour, which he says is a close approximation of the Royal Air Force estimate. But, you know, he says that that's well within its capability, but ignores the altitude consideration, because if the engineer who designed the shaker system for Boeing is correct, at 500 to 1,000 feet, that plane can't fly faster than 220 without starting to rip apart, and 330 would be its absolute max, which is, in my opinion, decisive evidence of fakery, because you can't have a plane flying faster than the laws of aerodynamics would allow.
And we've been, I've had a, you know, of course you're talking about Joe Keith, and I've also been talking to a guy called Roger Herbst, who is, don't know what his exact title is, but he's involved with the Seattle 9/11 Truth Visibility Project and website. But he's an engineer from Boeing, engineered there and helped design the flight system for the 777, I believe. He is basically kind of not really answering that question. I asked him about that, and he's basically gives long, sort of convoluted non-answers to, and says he basically doesn't know.
This isn't a complicated, convoluted question. It doesn't require a complicated or convoluted answer.
I mean, you know, I've been, you know, trying to get even more of a handle on that.
I think that what Fife is saying is absolutely right, and that this is, you know, decisive refutation of the claims to authenticity. And I couldn't believe that Anthony Lawson would treat it in such a casual fashion by tacking it on at the end. I mean, we all know that the maximum velocity these planes can attain at 35,000 feet or so is in excess of 572, even though their cruising speed is somewhere right around 563.
Right.
At that high altitude.
And there's, you know, there's actually two separate points, I guess. One is, you know, the air density being so much greater at the lower altitude.
Right.
You know, could the engines even pull that much air through the engine in that amount of time?
Yeah.
Because at a certain point, there would be so much air density that it would start acting as a brake rather than
an
accelerator.
And then the second issue
is, even if you can get that amount of thrust and that amount of air coming through the engine, will the plane start to, you know, vibrate at its resonant frequencies and start to shake itself apart?
Well, I get reports that Boeing is being real cagey and not releasing this information, which ought to be simple, easily accessible. So if Boeing weren't covering something up, if it didn't have something to cover up, I don't think their behavior would be what it's been, which is a further, though indirect, confirmation.
Right.
And
it's like cutting the frames out cleansing the video. If they had a document that said, no, hey, it can go 500 miles an hour, here's what we say, here's the document, they'd be out with it, you would think.
Right, absolutely. And when you get these claims that say down in Australia some 757 was flying at around 400 miles an hour, it turns out it's a souped up version. It has special engines. It's been reconfigured so you can handle it more like a fighter. I mean, it's not a standard, you know, plane of the kind that's supposed to be involved here, which of course is a 767. And what I like especially, however, is that Anthony has committed himself to a speed for the aircraft. So if 572 miles an hour turns out to be well above the maximum speed that such a plane could fly at that altitude without shaking apart, then I think it will be very obvious that he's completely wrong.
That's right. You know. So, and then, of course, now in September, Clues social service gets to that, calling the steel slicing aluminum wings impossible, and what Lawson and Irving are trying to suggest is that possibly the planes were rigged in some way to assist their entry into the towers, or that the towers were rigged in some way to assist entry of the planes, or that they both were rigged.
This is very interesting hypothetical reasoning because, I mean, after all, the way the issue is supposed to be addressed is assuming this is a conventional 767 with all the ordinary properties, is it possible it could have pass through the building the way it's portrayed? I think the answer to that is clearly no. And the fact that they're resorting to these hypothetical alternative explanations to show how it could have happened under a rather bizarre scenario that contradicts the basic assumption that it's a conventional 767 is revealing. It implies their concession that the appearance of the plane as it melts into the building is an illusion, cannot be accurate unless there's something very unusual taking place.
But I think I might have a new simple visual study that actually might be able to bypass that anyway.
Terrific.
And this is sort of teaching an old dog a new trick, but if you'll go to acebaker.com and look for the blue or purple asterisk and click on that.
Hang on. I'm going there.
Yeah, so acebaker.com, and you'll see there's a music video, but just to the right of that, there's either a blue or a purple asterisk, and then you click on that asterisk, and it should just bring up a...
I'm looking at it.
Okay, so what this is, of course, the infamous ghost plane CNN Michael Hezarkhani footage. I took this from the CNN America Remembers DVD, which is the highest quality version that I'm aware of, enlarged it, cropped it down to this. What's new about what I've done here, we see 8 frames, the final 7 frames of the approach. Of course, we see that mysterious flash on the tip of the nose. Then I freeze the frame where the plane appears to be mostly inside the building. The wings are already through the wall.
Yeah.
Then the final frame that I've put in there is from later in the video. Now, it's from the same video sequence. There is a big discontinuity. There's a big edit, but the final frame shows this gaping, smoking hole. And actually, I had to enlarge that particular frame a little bit more even than the other one. So we'll finish explaining why I think this proves that we're looking at an impossible event here when we come back.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo, with my special guest, Ace Baker. We're discussing video fakery on 9/11. Stand by. Today, my special guest, Ace Baker, is a musician and a composer and an expert in digital processing, and we're on his website, acebaker.com. If you click on the asterisk, you find when you hit the page, you'll find yourself looking at 7 or 8 frames of the plane hitting the South Tower, and Ace is going to take us through it with a new proof that this is a physical impossibility. Of course, Ace, you know, this is something that many of the critics of the films of 9/11 have been concerned about from the beginning, that you have an aluminum aircraft and you've got a building that's made of steel and concrete, and that, you know, the result is going to be the same whether the plane is in motion hitting the stationary building or the plane were stationary and the building were in motion. I mean, it's going to crunch it like a tin can, and yet that's not what happens. It effortlessly flows through the building as though it were made of tissue or cardboard or what have you. So I think this is really a fascinating subject, and I'm glad you're coming up with a new proof, because I've been convinced for a long time that so many of these issues, once you see them, are obvious.
Right, and so there's the supporters of the official hijacker theory will explain this ghost plane video by saying, well, there's just not sufficient resolution in the video to really tell what's going on. And now Anthony Lawson and Nick Irving have come up with a different kind of explanation, they will say, well, yeah, you're right, an ordinary airplane couldn't bust through like this, but maybe the tower was specially prepared, or maybe there were some kind of explosives on the edges of the wings or something like that. I think this little GIF sequence that I've put together here actually blows both of those explanations out of the water, because the final frame that I've cut in here, I think, clearly shows that there's at least 20 times more resolution than we need to see a big gaping hole in the side of the tower if one were present on that second to the last frame, where you see that both wings have gone completely inside the tower. You can see the one little tiny tip of the right wing sticking out on that second to the last frame.
Yeah.
But clearly, if there were a huge hole present cut by the wing, we would see it at that point in time. And
it would have to exist already because the plane's already passed through it.
The plane has gone through it. And
so it might be useful here, Ace, would be to superimpose that last image over the final image so that you can see how much is missing from the last image.
And so I think, number one, I think we have plenty enough resolution. And secondly, even if we want to think that, well, somebody, you know, cut all the steel and concrete out of that section of the plane or that section of the building in an airplane-shaped hole and replaced it with balsa wood and then painted it all up to look like the outside of the tower again, it doesn't matter. If this plane is busting through, then at the point in time when those wings are through, you would see the hole, and we just simply don't.
Yeah.
Now, there's a few other things that we can notice from this sequence, too. Of course, we've got the infamous flash on the nose, and I've never really heard anybody get with a definitive explanation of whether that's something real or not, or what it might be.
Well, of course, as you know, Dave Von Kleist has been the pioneer in talking about the flash and the apparent pod, which I suspect may be a flight management system that allows a plane's controls to be overridden from a distant location. But what you're talking about now is very, very interesting. I mean, I always assumed the flash, if it were bona fide or genuine, was some kind of igniter to guarantee that the jet fuel supply would go up in a dramatic fireball so we'd get the shock and awe effect. I mean, this is when I contemplate the presumption that the videos are authentic. Now, of course, it's compounded by if the videos are fake, and the evidence seems to me to be overwhelmingly in support of that conclusion, then the question becomes, well, you wonder why they didn't use a standard 767 and why the flash.
Right, and I think the flash is real. I think it's some kind of an explosive charge. Whether or not it was necessary for the explosions that were to follow, I don't know. But I can, in terms of trying to composite these videos and do so quickly with a number of different videos and make them all agree with each other as much as possible, I think the flash would be extremely useful because I think you would...
Time sequencing.
Exactly. You would say, well, we're going to align the nose of the airplane with the flash, and that's going to be the last frame that you see before we start erasing the airplane.
Uh-huh.
And that would give you a very convenient, you'd go to that frame on the video, flash frame, and you could easily locate that and position your airplane in space and in time.
Yeah. Is it your opinion, this is an aside, that in fact there were not planes in either the North Tower or the South Tower? That it was all, no, or let me put it this way, more generally, no flying entity hit the building?
I think no flying entity. I'll tell you why. You know, I don't want to try to get too far into the minds of the perpetrators because they might, do things that were illogical just to be illogical.
Yeah.
But if there was any kind of flying object, then you run the severe risk that people are going to take pictures of them. Whereas if there's nothing, if there's just explosions, well, how do innocent bystanders take a picture of nothing?
Yeah, they must say, my God, I must have missed it, because, I mean, there's the explosion.
Right.
And it's high up in the building.
And the other thing that's very, very interesting about this and others, and this will tie back into September Clues and Anthony Lawson and Nick Irving, but you can see on my GIF sequence here, looking at the first bunch of frames, you might think this was a black and white picture. It's all gray. and white. Now, the towers, of course, are gray in real life, so there's no problem there. But the airplane is flying and tilted to the right in pretty much full sunlight. The underneath side of the wings are gray in real life. This is assuming that it's United Airlines Flight 175. However, the underneath side of a United Airlines jet is blue.
Yeah.
It is a bright, rich blue color.
Wonderful, Ace.
And you can see, in the last
couple
of frames.
Whatever else you can see, it's not a dark, rich blue.
It's gray, and we can see the sky blue. The sky blue looks about the right color. And there's really no reason why that color would go up.
You're doing so much brilliant work, but to me it's such a disgrace that the 9/11 research community has blackballed everyone who's ever looked at video fakery because, by God, this minority was right. And I go back to people like Gerald Holmgren and the Web Fairy and Nico Haupt and others who've been making these arguments forever, and nobody has been willing to take them seriously. And I think about how much Morgan Reynolds has been derided for taking up this issue. And, I mean, I just say, thank God that you and he and a few others have persisted with this, because I think the evidence you're coming up with is overwhelming, notwithstanding the fact that Nick Irving, who did previously good work, and I like Nick, and Anthony Lawson, who had two brilliant little pieces This Is an Orange and the 9/11, the Towers of Dust, is resisting what is appearing increasingly obvious. Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest, Ace Baker. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. My special guest today, Ace Baker, a musician and composer and expert in digital processing. We're talking about new evidence about video fakery on 9/11, and we're discussing some attempts to rebut previous research and also new research from Ace Baker, which you can find on his website at acebaker.com. Just click on the asterisk and you're going to see this seven frames?
I think it's seven or eight frames.
That I think Ace is absolutely correct, provide decisive evidence that the impact is a fake image, because when you see the residual effects of the impact from the huge hole that's torn out, it's not present as the plane is creating it, but it would have had to be present as the plane was creating it. It can't suddenly have popped up mysteriously later after the plane's already gone through. I mean, this is an impossibility. So once again, Ace, I think that the laws of science help us out here, because we're trading in impossibilities. It's like the JFK case. They gave a weapon that they gave Oswald. They tried to frame Oswald with a weapon that couldn't fire the bullets that killed the president. They ignored the fact he was down the second floor during the time of the assassination, and that Marina said he admired the president and thought he was a good guy, so he had neither the motive, the means, or the opportunity to kill the president. I mean, it's all so blatant. Just because they have this power, they think they can cram anything down our throat.
And they made these mistakes, or had to change things up. The best laid plans. I think.
What could be more blatant than the fact that you don't have that blue color on the bottom of what's supposed to be a United aircraft?
And we've got this Park Forman video, which was very interesting too. I don't have anything to show you on it, but. It's also in September Clues, and it's also criticized by Anthony Lawson and Nick Irving. And one of the problems, this one shows the plane, coming in again in full sunlight. The plane or the camera is basically looking west, and so the buildings and everything are in full sunlight, and yet the plane appears to be black.
Yeah.
I've been looking at the version, again, that's in the CNN America Remembers, which is a high-quality copy of this, and it's black.
Yeah.
And you can understand that, it might be a little degraded here or there, but it doesn't take a plane that's gray and blue in full sunlight and make it black. It just doesn't.
Your discoveries, Ace, and they're ongoing, is just further confirmation of what most students of science understand. When you have a true hypothesis, it spawns off more and more consequences that are capable of test, and what you're doing is finding more and more evidence that confirms the hypothesis. And I just wish there were a little more scientific integrity from those who have sought to debunk. I'm not talking about Anthony Lawson now and Nick Irving, but there are an awful lot of people out there who, it seems to me, are not facing up to the evidence. And it's like Dave Von Kleist says, if you show evidence to an honest man who holds a false opinion that the evidence corrects, then he either changes his mind or he ceases to be sincere. I think he's right in that. Now, Dave Von Kleist is a perfect example of a guy who is, in my opinion, utterly sincere, utterly absorbed with the hypothesis that these were non-standard planes and the flash was something funny and blah, 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 but it was all legit footage. And I just say to Dave Von Kleist, Dave, I think you're a terrific guy. You do an awful lot of good, but I think we've reached the point where the evidence is overwhelming that these videos are faked. And the fact that you've spent a lot of time and effort on studying, videos that you thought were authentic, this has a parallel in JFK, too. Would you believe, Ace, there are people who spent 20 or 30 years of their lives studying the frames of the Zapruder film to try to prove what happened? But, of course, so much has been altered and changed that if you assume the Zapruder film is authentic, it becomes logically impossible to reconstruct what actually happened in Dealey Plaza. It's perfectly similar here. You can't begin to understand what happened if you take for granted that those planes were authentic. And Morgan has put his finger on exactly the rationale. If you don't have the planes, then you don't have the hijackers. If you don't have the hijackers, you don't have the Arabs. If you don't have the Arabs, you don't have the justification for the war on terror, the invasion in Afghanistan and of Iraq. So what's going on here really is gutting the heart and soul of the government's position. It's absolutely gutting it from the inside out. It's like the discovery, which Judy, I think, is overwhelmingly producing evidence for. And incidentally, I mentioned she'll be on tomorrow to talk about some of her most recent work. If you can establish unconventional weapons were used here, whether it's lasers or masers or plasmoids or antimatter or whatever, that really implicates the government in a powerful way because only the government has access to weapons like that, not the ordinary guy. You can buy a thermite and thermate on eBay for crying out loud. So if thermate was involved, and who knows, it may have been involved, but it obviously, in my opinion, cannot possibly be the whole story. That doesn't get you anywhere in terms of leading to culprits. It's like an all-purpose thing. It just doesn't work. It doesn't. The evidentially discovering that unconventional weaponry was involved is overwhelmingly powerful, just as discovering that there was video fakery involved. That's overwhelmingly powerful, and it also obviously implicates the mass media in these events.
It does, and people who think that 9/11 was an inside job but want to hold on to real planes and want to believe that the news media was tricked right along with the rest of us, well, it's an interesting hypothesis, maybe, but I think, even forgetting the planes, I think it's obvious that the media is not interested in investigating this story. I mean, it ought to be this amazingly great investigative journalism piece.
Yeah, it's a fascinating story. Yeah. Just what you've been presenting today, Ace. I just say, look, the rest of this 9/11 research community is being left behind. The train has pulled out of the station. What you have done and Morgan has done and Judy has done is just blowing this case into little tiny pieces, blowing it to smithereens. And people who want to understand what happens are going to have to study your work. And if they're not interested in what happens, then they ought to go out and cultivate their garden because surely they have better things to do.
Right. And you bring up, the division within the truth movement, and I, if I can put a message of unity, it would be that, even though we may have great divisions on trying to prove what did happen, I think there's a whole lot of us who are quite convinced that we know the official story is completely false.
Yes.
And that we ought to always keep in mind the distinction between those two things and to take every opportunity to stand together in saying that we know the official story is provably false, and even though we have these large disagreements about what did happen, we're completely sure that there were no 19 hijackers and that there were no gravity collapses.
Yeah, Ace, I couldn't agree with you more. I say that sort of thing all the time. But if you got a research commitment to the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, you got to go where logic and evidence lead. And this is where it has led us.
Right.
And that doesn't mean that should be your frontline story when you're explaining what's wrong with 9/11 because you want to go through the simple evidence that disproves the government's account.
And so there's
See if you like this, Ace. A simple one to defeat the belief that jet fuel fires could have caused the steel to weaken, much less melt. Just point out that, but isn't jet fuel used in jet airplanes? isn't it burned in their engines? Isn't it burned at an extremely high temperature in their engines? And yet those engines aren't weakening or melting, are they? Or planes will be falling out of the sky.
Right. You know, it's really, you know, a whole other study in people who, you know, just can't really look at this, you know. So
stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest, Ace Baker. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. Guest today, Ace Baker, a musician, composer, expert in digital processing, producing new proofs of video fakery on 9/11. Ace, I mean, I just love your work. And I was thinking how in the history of science, it's usually very small groups that make the major accomplishments. Think of, Tycho and Kepler, for example, or Watson and Crick. Tycho and Kepler discovering the orbits of the planets, you know, using Tycho's data, Kepler realized that they weren't circular but were elliptical. That, Watson and Crick discovered the double helix structure of the DNA molecule. Then you have individual great superior minds like Isaac Newton or Albert Einstein. It's not large groups. You know, science by committee doesn't work any better than posting by committee, I would suggest. And you know, the fact that you have this wolf pack out there attacking, constantly attacking, the most serious work that's actually cut the cutting edge, that's doing the real research, to me, is just a travesty and a shame. And I wish that some of those involved here would just shape up and face up to it. I mean, science, like philosophy, requires a great deal of honesty. And I'm sorry to say that that's not what I'm seeing across the board in the 9/11 community, which is, to me, profoundly disturbing. But,
well, yeah, it bugs me, too. You know, that gift sequence that I brought today, just a few days ago, I posted that on the Loose Change forum. And was just, you know, asking, saying, hey, you know, do we have an explanation for what we see here? Here's my take on it. And a couple people replied, but within an hour I was banned from the forum. And we can disagree about trying to do this research. That's all fine. But when you've got, you know, one of the loudest and most important voices in the truth movement, and that is Loose Change, the film, the website, the guys that are behind it, these guys have a very strong and important voice. Of course, talking about Dylan Avery, Corey Rowe, Jason Burmess, for them to have a policy against even discussing no planes research, it's just verboten.
Yeah, well, these are kids, you know. I mean, this. I mean, I hate to say it, they've accomplished so much, and I'm a huge fan, but really, it's like Alex Jones, you know. Alex is a great guy, but, I mean, he doesn't have a background in science. What can you expect for him to appreciate about subtleties of complex research? It's just not in the cards. They just don't have the background, the ability, or the training, although they're doing wonderful things in so many ways. They've just reached the point where the challenges posed by this sophisticated research exceeds their ability to understand it.
So I want to just bring out one more thing that's in September Clues and has also been in some of the early research by Web Ferry that I think is a mistake and needs to be brought out because it is used to discredit no planes research. And that is this thing of like missing wings. When you see this a moving plane and you can look at individual frames and part of the wing appears like it's gone. Web Ferry called them amputee planes and so forth. This turns out to just not be something to worry about. You can make a video, just, you know, move your hand in front of the camera and then go back and look at the frames and you'll have missing fingers or whatever. It's just the way that things are captured. And the early researchers were saying, well, this is a glitch in the computer-generated airplane, and actually it's exactly the other way around, that video can tend to, you know, have moving objects, have missing parts, whereas a computer-generated image would tend to be perfect on every frame, which is why I think that the overlaid plane images were actually video images rather than being computer-generated images. And I also want to bring out just a little tease, perhaps for next time in a few weeks or a month or whenever I might be able to come back on.
Well, I want to book you right now for the 20th or the 21st. You take your pick, Ace. That's 2 weeks from today or yesterday. You take your pick. because I wanted to do this before I got you off the show. You're on the 21st.
And so what I'm, there has been, I'll set this up, there's a lot of talk about, again, the CNN Hezarkhani ghost plane video. Could it actually have been taken from anywhere on Earth? There have been people like Peggy Carter and Fred BS Registration have actually gone down to Battery Park at the tip of Manhattan where the shot was allegedly taken from and tried to recreate the shot. Of course, the Twin Towers are no longer there, but some of the buildings in the foreground are still there, and there appears to be a building missing in Ghost Plane,
right.
That would be 19 Rector Street, that is does appear in their attempts to recreate this shot. They can't figure out how to get it. What I'm doing is I've been building a 3D model.
Great.
And it's not quite done yet. We've got all the buildings of the World Trade Center. We've got 19 Rector. We've got we have about one more building to go, the Downtown Athletic Club, which is, of course, famous for the Heisman Trophy, but is in that Ghost Plane shot. And as soon as that's done, which should be within the next couple of days, I'm going to spend a bunch of time seeing if I can recreate that shot. And this model should be accurate enough and is accurate enough to make a pretty definitive determination one way or the other on whether that's a physically possible shot.
Good. Let me ask you this. Anthony Lawson, about 26 minutes in, shows two different shots that he claims are consistent of a plane approaching, and one of them he's showing how the plane actually is in the shot, and you see at the far right of the image, and it's flying on a perfectly horizontal trajectory right into the building. Then he's got another shot that he claims is consistent with it, and I swear it looks to me absolutely as though it's changing altitude rather considerably and sort of sweeping down into the building. Are you aware of this phenomenon I'm talking about here, Ace?
I'm aware of it. I haven't studied it, and I want to. I will say that approach angles from being viewed from different angles could be very deceptive, when you have a very long depth of field versus a short depth of field, something like what's actually a sort of a moderate decline in the approach angle might look really severe from one angle and might look almost flat from another. But and also off the top of my head, that just doesn't sound like the type of mistake they would make. We're not dealing with amateurs here. We're dealing with total pros.
Let me make a point of logic that Anthony Lawson may not appreciate. I mean, he's given his rebuttal to September Clues, and of course more is to come, but he's actually only rebutted the first segment. There are eight different segments of September Clues. Now, there's a huge difference from the point of view of logic in taking, even if we're talking about video strips, like we talk about the Zapruder film, which is 26 and a half seconds long, when it's run at 0.2 seconds per frame. Now, to show that that film is authentic, you'd have to show every single feature of the film is authentic and corresponds to the way things were. That's a virtual impossibility because you'd have to know everything the way things were in order to draw the comparison. But to falsify, you only have to find one thing that's wrong to falsify it. In other words, it's a difference. To verify, you got to show everything is right. To falsify, you only have to show one thing is wrong. And this is something that Anthony Lawson doesn't seem to understand at all. I mean, you got these eight parts of September Clues. He's making a sweeping claim that every single criticism that's made in September Clues that bears on the authenticity of the film is mistaken. And that's just such a difficult proposition to defend that, I don't understand why he's even making it. I mean, you don't actually have to be a student of logic to appreciate this point. But the fact of the matter is you and Morgan have shown, in my opinion, at least a dozen different ways in which we can prove that these videos are faked. And unless Anthony could rebut every single one of them successfully, not on the basis of false assumptions or presuppositions or hypothetical reasoning, but actually show you made a mistake in your reasoning, you have established your point. He has not. Ace, I can't thank you enough. Keep up the brilliant work. I look forward to having you back on the air here with me on the 21st. Thank you. Keep it up.
It's my pleasure. We'll see you then, Jim.
You got it, Ace.
Bye-bye.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. If you want to know what's going on in 9/11 research, you better tune in. Thank you for listening. All right.